What police training does, at its best, is teach officers how to keep themselves out of this kind of trouble, to avoid the risk of momentary autism. In a traffic stop, for instance, the officer is trained to park behind the car. If it's at night, he shines his brights directly into the car. He walks toward the car on the driver's side, then stops and stands just behind the driver, shining his flashlight over the shoulder onto his or her lap. I've had this happen to me, and I always feel a bit like I'm being disrespected. Why can't the officer stand and talk to me face to face, like a normal human being? The reason is that it would be virtually impossible for me to pull a gun on the officer if he's standing behind me. First of all, the officer is shining his flashlight on my lap so he can see where my hands are and whether I'm going for a gun. And even if I get my hands on a gun, I have to twist almost entirely around in my seat, lean out the window, and fire around the door pillar at the officer. And remember, I'm blinded by his brights. And all this in his full view. The police procedure, in other words, is for my benefit. It means that the only way the officer will ever draw his gun on me is if I engage in a drawn-out and utterly unambiguous sequence of actions. Fife once ran a project in Dade County, Florida, where there was an unusually high number of violent incidents between police officers and civilians. You can imagine the kind of tension that caused. Community groups accused the police of being insensitive and racist. The police responded with anger and defensiveness. Violence, they said, was a tragic but inevitable part of police work. It was an all-too-familiar script. Fife's response, though, was to sidestep that controversy and conduct a study. He put observers in squad cars and had them keep a running score of how the officer's behavior matched up with proper training techniques. It was things like, did the officer take advantage of available cover, he said. We train officers to make themselves the smallest possible target, so you leave it to the bad guy to decide whether they'll be shooting or not. So we were looking at things like, did the officer take advantage of available cover, or did he just walk in the front door? Did he keep his gun away from the individual at all times? Did he keep his flashlight in his weak hand? In a burglary call, did they call back for more information, or did they just say 10-4? Did they ask for backup? Did they coordinate their approach? You know, you be the shooter, I'll cover you. Did they take a look around the neighborhood? Did they position another car at the back of the building? When they were inside the place, did they hold their flashlights off to the side? Because if the guy happens to be armed, he's going to shoot at the flashlight. On a traffic stop, did they look at the back of the car before approaching the driver? These kinds of things. What Fife found was that the officers were really good when they were face to face with a suspect and when they had the suspect in custody. In those situations, they did the right thing 92% of the time. But in their approach to the scene, they were terrible, scoring just 15%. That was the problem. They didn't take the necessary steps to steer clear of temporary autism. And when Dade County zeroed in on improving what officers did before they encountered the suspect, the number of complaints against officers and the number of injuries to officers and civilians plummeted. You don't want to put yourself in a position where the only way you have to defend yourself is to shoot someone, Fife says. If you have to rely on your reflexes, someone is going to get hurt and get hurt unnecessarily. If you take advantage of intelligence and cover, you will almost never have to make an instinctive decision.